This program is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
My name is John Anderton. Today we will be discussing myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome, also referred to as MECFS, with Dr. Nanda Issa. Dr. Issa is a medical officer in the chronic viral diseases branch in the Division of High Consequence Pathogens and Pathology, where activities related to MECFS are located within CDC. We'll talk about an important CDC project in this area and hope that by the end of this podcast, our listeners will have a better understanding of how this complex syndrome affects children and young people. Dr. Issa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for hosting. I'm happy to be here today.
Dr. Issa, can you give us an overview of MECFS in children and young people?
Sure. MECFS is a disabling and complex illness that could affect up to 2 in 1,000 children. These children find that they're no longer able to do activities like they did before getting sick. Basically, there's a drop in activity levels, and this occurs with significant fatigue, and that fatigue does not result from lack of rest. Another thing these patients find is that MECFS symptoms worsen after physical or mental activity, and that's not something that would have been a problem before their illness. This phenomenon is known as post-exertional malaise. They may also have sleep problems, such as inability to fall or stay asleep, or feeling unrefreshed after sleep. They might have problems with thinking or memory that can affect their schoolwork. Children may also be dizzy or experience worsening of symptoms while standing or sitting upright, and this is known as orthostatic intolerance.
And how does MECFS in children and young people compare to MECFS in adults?
Children often have different experience of this illness compared to adults. In children, and particularly in adolescents, MECFS is more likely to start after an acute illness like the flu or mononucleosis, which is commonly known as mono. In children, MECFS can sometimes begin more gradually than in adults. Also, they do differ a bit in their clinical presentation when compared to adults.
How so? Do children and adolescents have different symptoms?
Well, children and adolescents have most of the same symptoms as adults, but there are some key differences. Children, especially adolescents, with MECFS have orthostatic intolerance more than adults. This again refers to that dizziness, lightheadedness, or other symptoms that are triggered when standing up, and sometimes even just sitting upright. It's often the most bothersome symptom in children and may make other symptoms of MECFS worse.
That's very interesting. You mentioned sleep before. Does that differ in children compared to adults?
As a matter of fact, yes. Sleep problems in young children with MECFS may show up as a lack of their usual energy. In adolescents with MECFS, sleep problems may be particularly hard to detect, as sleep cycles change during puberty. Many adolescents begin to stay up late and often have trouble waking up early. On top of that, the demands of classes, homework, after-school jobs, and social activities also affect sleep. In children and adolescents with MECFS, common complaints include difficulty falling or staying asleep, daytime sleepiness, or intense and vivid dreaming.
The effects on sleep seem quite complex. What else can differ?
Well, adults with MECFS often have muscle and joint pain. Children and young people with the disease also have pain, but headaches and stomach pain are more often reported in this age group. Also, younger children may not be able to describe the pain very well. Finally, I think it's also worth mentioning that children do tend to have a better prognosis or prediction of the course of the illness than adults. However, at any age, it can still lead to severe illness and lifelong disability.
Now, I understand that reaching a MECFS diagnosis can be difficult. Can you please explain why?
Sure. Diagnosing MECFS, particularly in this young age group, can be complicated for a number of factors. For starters, there's no lab test or biomarker to confirm MECFS. Diagnosis can also be difficult because fatigue and other symptoms of MECFS are common to many illnesses. This illness also has a pattern of remission and relapse that can be quite unpredictable. One other thing that can further complicate diagnosis is that the frequency and severity of symptoms can vary from person to person. Because of these factors, it may not be obvious to healthcare providers that these patients are ill. Among children and young people, diagnosis may be difficult simply because these groups find it hard to accurately describe their symptoms or how they feel. In many cases, we're talking about children who might have difficulty explaining a tummy ache, let alone a chronic illness with a lot of different symptoms. Sometimes parents might even describe their child's symptoms differently from how the child describes them. So it's important for healthcare providers to talk and listen to both the patient and parent or guardian.
How do medical professionals go about diagnosing pediatric ME/CFS?
The diagnostic approach to pediatric ME/CFS is the same as it is for adults. The healthcare provider will review the medical history and conduct a physical exam. They'll also order lab tests and other tests if indicated. Typically, a diagnosis of ME/CFS requires certain symptoms to be present for at least 6 months, but individual symptoms can be evaluated and managed during this time, well before an official diagnosis is made. Children especially should be seen by their providers and get support as soon as they become ill. In other words, a child with some or all of the symptoms of ME/CFS should not wait for 6 months to see a doctor. This six-month period is used to complete laboratory tests and other assessments, including follow-up appointments, to check for other illnesses that have symptoms similar to ME/CFS.
Tell us more about the children with ME/CFS. Does it affect certain children more than others?
Actually, yes. It is more common in adolescents than younger children. And among adolescents, girls are more affected than boys. Some studies have shown that 3 to 4 times more adolescent girls have ME/CFS compared to adolescent boys. In the younger age groups, the number of girls and boys who are affected are about the same. Coincidentally, in adults, women are more likely to suffer from ME/CFS than men.
And do we know what causes this illness?
While the exact cause or causes of ME/CFS are still unknown, evidence supports the combination of factors that are thought to contribute to the development of this illness. These may include infection, immune system changes, stress affecting body chemistry, changes in energy production, and possible genetic factors.
I also understand that pediatric ME/CFS has no cure. What treatment options are available for children experiencing ME/CFS?
That's correct. We hope that one day there will be a cure, but for right now, symptoms can be treated or managed to provide some relief. Patients, their families, and healthcare providers need to work together to decide which symptoms cause the most problems. They should discuss the possible benefits and harms of any treatment plans, including medicines and other therapies. Management of symptoms that affect quality of life in children and adolescents is a priority. A treatment plan for children who might have ME/CFS should focus on addressing the most disruptive symptoms first. They should also come back and see the healthcare provider, as symptoms may change in intensity over time or new symptoms may flare up. However, with an individualized management plan, many children and adolescents can continue in school and social activities.
I imagine this illness puts tremendous strain on both a child and their family. Can you paint us a picture of how ME/CFS might impact a child's daily life?
Yes, school and social relationships are at the top of the list when talking about pediatric ME/CFS. Children with ME/CFS may miss school and not be able to do their hobbies or participate in social activities like they were able to do before becoming ill. Some schools have encouraged these children to participate in extracurricular activities if they are up to it or attend during lunch period, even if they're not attending school for academic instruction. This provides opportunities for social involvement and development both inside and outside the academic setting, and the impact of social growth cannot be underestimated. Interaction with friends and peers is essential for their well-being. Students with ME/CFS can also have problems with memory or concentration, which impacts schoolwork. For example, they may not be able to complete a school assignment in the time allotted. It's important to identify these students early in the course of the illness so that accommodations can be made so that they don't fall behind academically. In the case of finishing schoolwork, a student with ME/CFS may need to arrange to take work home or may need a few days' extension to complete it. This is also why it's important that parents, schools, and healthcare providers all work closely together to address the child's needs.
Now, I'm sure something weighing on a lot of parents' minds is, how can I help my child? Can you expand on ways parents can get involved in their child's treatment?
Parents can help in many ways. First, be an advocate for your child and learn as much as possible about ME/CFS. One suggestion given to parents is to keep track of how your child feels and what they're doing, as this may help to find ways to make their activities easier. A daily symptom diary makes tracking easier for the family. Second, get to know your school's resources. Students with ME/CFS may qualify for an individualized learning plan, but an evaluation will be needed. Parents can work with a team of educators and professionals at school to schedule an evaluation and create a schedule that helps the child succeed. And finally, it's important for a child's well-being to participate in family and social activities. Students with a chronic illness may feel isolated from peers and friends. Talk to the school to see how this can be addressed.
Why does awareness for this illness in children and adolescents matter?
One of the reasons to be aware of this illness is the need to differentiate it from school phobia. Children with ME/CFS may miss school, which may be mistaken for a fear of school. But unlike those with school phobia, children with ME/CFS are still ill and inactive on weekends and holidays. As we mentioned, they may not be able to do their hobbies or take part in social activities or complete school assignments like they did before the illness. The sooner ME/CFS can be recognized as a possible diagnosis, the sooner the child can get help and the sooner the symptoms can be managed. Being able to participate in school and social activities is important for children's development, and addressing health issues due to ME/CFS will enable the children to maximize their success and well-being, both in and out of the classroom. Also, I think it's worth mentioning that early identification is important not just for the success of that individual student, but for all the students in the classroom. As chronic absenteeism, which is seen in children with any number of chronic health issues, can adversely affect the achievements of a whole class as well. That early identification and intervention can minimize the impact on academic performance and social development, can also help students feel confident and ready to learn in the classroom and interact with their peers.
Today you've talked a lot about this illness and how it can impact school attendance. Is CDC doing anything specific to address this problem?
Yes, actually. Since 2018, CDC has been partnering with the National Association of School Nurses, or NASN, to conduct the School-Based Active Surveillance Project. Basically, school nurses track chronic absenteeism data and identify students with absences related to chronic illnesses like ME/CFS. This project has built school nurse capacity and data collection and knowledge about ME/CFS through data coordinator trainings and educational courses. We're hoping to educate more school nurses about ME/CFS so they can actively identify potential cases among students, refer families for appropriate care, help track case numbers, and provide accommodations for those students who need it.
That sounds great. It's fantastic that you've been involving the school nurses. What ME/CFS resources does CDC have for families, healthcare professionals, and school educators?
CDC has fact sheets that were developed with input from people with ME/CFS, doctors who manage ME/CFS, and other stakeholders. These are great resources for families, healthcare providers, and schools. Please visit our website at www.cdc.gov/ME/CFS.
Dr. Issa, thank you for taking your time to talk to us about ME/CFS. I think this should give parents and healthcare professionals alike a better understanding of this illness and why awareness matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
For the most accurate health information, visit cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO.